Chairman Cooper, it is now 5:30. We may begin.
Thanks.
Hey, good evening. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Engineering and Operations Committee to the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency for October 6, 2022. Before we get going, I'd like to read a couple of announcements. I guess the first announcement is we're having some technical issues, and we're going to try and work around those as much as we can. Apparently, audio doesn't come in. People can hear us on the outside, but we can't hear them. So I'm not sure how we're going to take questions from the public. If they want to, I guess they can type it in. Can they not, Liz?
They cannot type it in.
Can I mute this? Probably.
So I can mute my personal laptop, and we should be able to hear them. So we can attempt that.
Oh, okay.
They might.
Well, we'll
have. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay, this meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service, which is going on right now, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, using either the call-in or the internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of the phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. For public that is attending in person, if you wish to speak, please attend, fill out one of the comment cards. Of course, the procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint shown on tonight's meeting will be posted on our website. And all committee members are present this evening. With that, we'll move to item one, the Pledge of Allegiance. If you would please stand and join in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Turn the other way. We'll have to get that
sorted. Item two is public comments. I have one comment card from Ms. Cam Noltemeyer. Ms. Noltemeyer.
Can I speak from my chair here? Yes, I just wanted to bring to your attention that Jerry Gladbeck, when he was alive, put something into action that is going to be taking place at next month. And I think you're all aware of that. And I just wanted to tell you that it would be much better if you put people in the position to be going forth from there, or else you're going to have the government taken over and doing it for you. And you have to have 9 people. You can only have 9 people that are running and would ever be put onto that board. So I don't know if there's any major changes to that, but since he died, I just thought I'd follow through with what I have in my whole big stack of issues on this. And it's definitely going through. And I don't know how you plan on handling it, but you have far too many already probably on the board. And the best of luck to you, but I will be following through on it. And when it was done under the way he did it, it's a lot stricter than anything that you do. And so it will be going through, and there can be only 9 people elected. And then they will be going on from that point. And I believe there are several of you who have already signed up along them. But I think it would be better if you have somebody taking those positions than to have the agency that is going to be backing this up filling it for you. It's going to be up to you. And if you think it's not going to happen, I think you'd be wrong. And I'm just sorry that he cannot be here to better inform you, because he's the one that put it into action a long time ago. And hopefully when you get to be elected there and it's all planned out from there on, the public will have a right to vote you in or vote you out of office. So I will try and find any answers if you need them, but otherwise that is going to be the way it's going to be going, and it's going through law school.
Thank you, Ms. Noldemeyer. And just to let you know, a couple of things is what we're well aware of what the election requirements are. People have had to apply. They had to do it back in July up to August. And people that are running. It had nothing to do with Jerry Gladbach. It was put together by Senator Scott Wilk, is who put the law into effect. It's not your turn to speak. I'm sorry, it's not your turn to speak. Senator Scott Wilk put that in law, and that was a requirement. So it's in its works. People that are running. People that are not running are not running. It'll be there in November 8th. And please, thank you for making us aware of it again. Item 3. Are there any members of the public and online that wish to make comments? Liz?
Seeing none.
Thank you. Item 3 is presented by Mr. Bunn. This is a recommend approval of technical revision to the Board of Directors policies and procedures regarding the general manager's authority to transfer easements.
Mr. Bunn, will you try talking on Zoom really quickly? We think we may have resolved it.
Yes, I sure will. Can you hear me? All right.
Clear.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Tom.
So this is a revision to the policies and procedures regarding the authority of the general manager. Those were revised earlier this year. And the current version has the general manager able to grant easements with a value of under $100,000. It doesn't explicitly say something that is actually pretty common, and that is that the general manager relinquishes easements that are already held by the agency. And that seems different than granting someone else an easement over our property. And in order to clear up any confusion or doubt about the authority of the general manager, we're recommending this change to the policies and procedures that explicitly says that the general manager can relinquish easements valued less than $100,000.
And that's all, Mr. Bunn?
That's it.
Any questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Good. Questions from the committee? So it was pretty well spelled out in the report. You had a chance to read it?
Yeah, no questions, no comments. Serious report.
Good. We'll recommend this move on to the board then. Can this go? This could go under consent. It's a very simple item. Let's put it under the consent calendar. Is that all right with the committee?
Yeah, agrees.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bunn.
Thank you all. I'm going to sign off now.
Okay, thanks.
Bye bye.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry, it took a little longer than expected.
Yeah, thanks. Good. As long as you got it going, that's great. Okay, item 4 is to recommend approval of a contract to conduct a pilot scale evaluation for alternative absorbents for PFAS removal from our groundwater. And this is presented by Ryan Bai.
Hi, I'm Ryan Bai. I'm a water system supervisor here at SCB Water. Tonight, I'm going to be presenting a proposal for WQTS to perform a pilot scale evaluation of 4 different filter medias for PFAS removal from SCBWA groundwater. I can't see the slide yet. There we go.
1 second. Oh, there you go.
No problem. Okay. Next slide, please. WQTS has done work for SCB Water before. This was the firm that helped us figure out what filter media to use for our NWELS treatment facility. They are somewhat local water quality treatment solutions. They're in Canoga Park, so not too far away. Apart from just doing that bench scale study, they've had an ongoing communication with us, getting data and helping us just look at how that data matched up against that bench scale study. So they have an intimate knowledge of our water quality and our operations. Next slide, please. This is how our current resin is faring within our NWELS treatment facility. In our lead vessels, so there's 2 vessels in the lead, the Evoqua PSR2 plus resin, we have not yet had a change out for that resin. The other 2 vessels had resin provided by Purolite. And as you can see, there have been change outs. We actually just did another change out this week for the lead B vessel. That red line there, I'm sorry, I thought there was a question. The red line there, is the warranty information for those specific resin types. Next slide, please. So one reason behind this pilot sale study is that there is definitely an ongoing operations and maintenance cost to these treatment facilities that we are either have in service today, in planning, or in construction. It's going to be for ongoing future that we're going to have these operations and maintenance costs. You can see the Evoqua PSR2 resin, that was the most recent change out we did, $294,000. So that increased performance does come with a price. The Purolite provided resin, that is an older quote, but still $194,000. So we have this ongoing cost that we're going to be occurring for every treatment facility that is going on and that we're constructing. So that's one of the reasons is try to develop or try to find out if there's any other media out there that is provides a similar bed life at a better cost. Next slide, please. So I mentioned before that the bench scale study we did, bench scale study is a smaller data set. It helps extrapolate performance based on accelerated data collection. It's not a perfect way of collecting data. At the time we were trying to construct the NWELS treatment facility, we had lost quite a bit of groundwater. And so we had to make a decision and an educated decision. So that at that time, the bench scale study worked for us. The proposed pilot study has more data because it's over a long period of time. It's a longer term study, provides a better idea of the media performance. And on top of that, is viewed more favorably by the Division of Drinking Water when you actually go through and try to permit different media types. On the left, you can see a flow chart of how the pilot study will work. On the right is an actual detailed view of the pilot study. The pilot skid mounted unit is actually going to be put on at one of our wells. So we'll be able to do as much real world testing of this media as possible. It will perform with our water, our specific water quality, and it'll allow us to look at four different types of media at that facility over a 52-week period. Next slide, please. Some highlights of the pilot study. As I mentioned, it's a 52-week period test, so it's a long-term study. During that time, we're going to be looking at four different medias. Some proposed medias are the Fluorosorb FS200, and that's absorption media. It's a little different than the ion exchange media that we're using today. There are also two different ion exchange that we're thinking about using. One is the SIR 110HP provided by ResinTech. Another one is the PFCR2 provided by ResinTech. Those are both ion exchange. And the last one we're thinking about is a granular activated carbon. These four different media types are something that we can select when we do our kickoff meeting. So these are just proposed media types. We have yet to actually finalize what media we are going to study. During that 52-week period, in order to save on cost, SCBWA staff will be doing the collection of sampling. Those samples that we collect are going to be sent to an independent third-party lab, and WQTS will maintain the unit. Next slide, please. So breakdown of the costs. The first is the kickoff meeting. At that time, we will finalize what type of media we're going to be using for the pilot study. And after that time, WQTS will come out with a testing plan for us and start building the pilot unit. After which time the pilot unit will be mobilized. We'll actually backwash the media and put it into use. After that time, it's a year's worth of collecting data. But we don't have to wait a whole year to get data back, because we'll be having progress report meetings where we'll be actually seeing the analytical results. During that time, hopefully we'll be able to start seeing some differences in media and seeing where we might want to progress, so we can implement those media types in ongoing construction processes. Afterwards, we'll be presented with a final report that we can use for permitting these medias when we're going through and permitting the facilities with Division of Drinking Water. So I would just say that the WQTS, they're unique in the fact that they are a kind of one-stop shop. Not only do they do the pilot portion, but they will provide the finalized report to help us with the process. They do have a good knowledge of our inner operations as well as our water quality. And Issam is well-respected in the field. He is the president of WQTS, been recognized by both AWWA and by Division of Drinking Water as a leader in the field of PFAS treatment. Next slide, please. So at that is, it's a recommendation that the board of directors authorize the general manager to enter into a contract with WQTS or Water Quality Treatment Solutions in the amount of $234,500 for the completion of a PFAS media pilot plant study. And with that, I'll be available for questions.
Okay, any questions from the public, Liz?
Seeing none.
President Martin.
Thank you, Ryan, for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. This would seem to be of interest to other agencies that are involved in PFAS remediation. Does WQTS, have they done this before for anyone else?
Yeah, I believe they've done pilot studies before. I know they've assisted in research for PFAS, but I couldn't give you any specific examples for agencies they've helped out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not questioning their capability for sure. I think, and I would support going forward. I'm just wondering if there's other agencies that may want to partner with us. Are the results of this type of test portable across agency boundaries to other agencies?
See, with filter media, it is not very specific, but it is specific to the water quality that you're using. So things like inorganic levels within the water, or the organic levels within the water that are specific to your water type, affect the long-term performance of the media. So yes, you can get data and use data and share data with other agencies, but when it comes down to the actual performance of the media, it is specific to the water quality in your area.
Would DDW have to have a test specific to another agency in order to accept their media?
No, I mean, they do look favorably upon pilot studies, especially when there's new media being evaluated. It's something that hasn't been used for ion exchange treatment, for PFAS treatment. But yeah, I don't think it is one of those things where it's absolutely 100% needed. It does give you a greater idea of what is out there and what is actually going to be able to perform well with your water. Does that make sense? I think I'm trying to answer it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think you probably already know the bottom line of my question is, do you think there's any other agency that would want to partner with us and share the cost of this if they can benefit from it as well?
I'm not sure at this time. I don't think I could speak for that.
Okay. Just something to think about. Yep. I'm supportive of moving forward.
Director Rozovsky.
Yeah, President Martin, I think Mr. Abercrombie mentioned this on our last EO meeting. Unfortunately, you know, column chromatography is very specific to a specific source and site, and to the chemistry of that water. We can have breakthroughs from our manufacturers, but you know, they use maybe distilled water with a spike substance, which is that does not reflect what's in our groundwater. So I understand the reason behind going this way. If you can go on slide 3 of your PowerPoint presentation, Mr. Bai, I'm curious on the warranty lines for Eurolight. I guess it's my understanding that if the orange line does not surpass it, that means the product was not good. Is that my understanding of it? Can you explain the warranty lines again?
Yeah, so the warranty lines, yeah, that is the actual warranty that the provider has given us for bed life. So what had happened with NWELS is initially upon startup, there were some operational deficiencies, or some operational issues, I should say. And with that, yeah, there was some premature breakthrough.
Is it my understanding that since breakthrough happened before the warranty line, then we're going to recoup some costs from Purolite?
Yeah, and that's, I think, where the operational problem came through. When there was an initial startup, there was some dirt that was pushed through into the media. Purolite had said that there was possibly problems with that dirt being pushed through, and it had affected their warranty. So at that time, I don't think it met their warranty conditions.
Okay, understood.
But to answer your question, typically, yes, if there's no sort of operational issue where in the case Ryan's
indicating the resin was fouled, essentially. So it had premature breakthrough. Had that not happened, there's typically then a proration of costs on a warranty, like a battery warranty, and so to speak, based on the life it was expected to be.
Okay. Understood. And if you go on the next slide, number four, where we have two different costs for two different resins. Can I understand the reason why we're trying to test, four different media types just to have some backups in the future? Is there a possibility of us moving into like a fixed long-term cost with an exclusive contract with Ubiqua or for their resin? Is that a possibility or that's not even a possibility?
No, it's something we have explored, but it's not something, it's like going rate, it's market price for that. So they will give us a fixed rate for a year, but even within there, there are conditions that would allow them to raise their costs. And we saw that with chlorine recently, and some other different types of operational costs associated with supply chain issues. It is something we have considered, but it is something that probably is not practical in real life application.
And for the four medias being studied, why do we choose the, aside from the granular activated carbon, the three other ones, why do we choose those specific ones? Are those the most commercially available resins?
So, yeah, I mean, part of what we're doing is we're trying to look at different providers. So if there are supply chain issues, we have other options available to us. So the four that were listed aren't set in stone. These are things that were being proposed. Absorption media, the FS200, is a newer type, it's not a new technology, but in terms of use with PFAS, it is something that is kind of cutting edge. And it has the possibility of having really long-term bed lives at a fraction of the cost of some of the ion exchange resins that are out there. It is currently going through the NSF certification process for being used in drinking water. So it is something that hasn't really been used widespread for PFAS removal, but it is something that has very promising outcomes.
Okay, understood. And on slide five, the pilot units, so they're going to be on site or they're going to be at Rio?
It's going to be on site at one of the wells. So it's going to be, we have yet to determine which well, probably has to do with site determination and water quality too. But we want to look at one of the wells that currently has PFAS contamination. It has to run 24/7. So it's going to have to be on site there.
Okay. Well, thank you for the presentation and thanks for operations for looking ahead and trying to find plan B, C, and D in case our current vendor is not able to meet our demand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Ford.
Thank you, Chairman. Ryan, I just had one question. We were sending this out to an independent laboratory. Did our laboratory say that they couldn't do this or what was the reasoning for doing that?
Yeah, there's a couple different reasons. One, we try to keep this as unbiased as possible, and that's one of the reasons why we're going with WQTS rather than one of the resin providers. WQTS is an independent third party. Same thing with that outside laboratory. It's an independent third party, so that there's not anybody to say that there's any tampering with data going forward. Another reason is just labor power and the availability of sampling, so we don't burden our lab folks. They have enough samples to analyze from our current wells that were in use and our treatment facilities that are coming online.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the presentation.
Yeah. Director Peterson.
Thank you, Ryan. One question for you is on the equipment. Is the equipment being, you might say, manufactured at the site, or is it owned by the consultant?
as far, I don't know, I'm not sure if it, we're going to retain that equipment going forward. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I have to look into that.
Yeah. Is it an existing equipment they have, they own?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe they are constructing it specifically for our pilot study.
Okay. So is there enough, so it sounds like we may own it at the end.
I would have to look into that and get back to you.
All right.
I see Mike with his hands up. I'm not sure if he's.
Mike, please go ahead. Mr. Albert?
Maybe not. But I can get back to you on that if you'd like.
That's fine. So I think we should go ahead with this.
Questions, Lynn?
No, I'm good.
Ryan, I'm not quite sure. You said they don't have NSF approval yet for the, at least the Fluorosorb, or did the other ones have NSF approval?
I believe so, yes. Their Fluorosorb is going through their final stages of NSF approval right now.
Okay. Very good. No, these kinds of studies are always excellent. And save us a lot of money. With that, we'll move this on to the board.
Yep.
And how do you want to handle this one at the board?
I think it'd be handled as a consent, a reasonable project, and as the data behind it in the presentation, we will do the presentation in the board report.
Okay, let's do that. And if there's questions, we can always do a shortened presentation or something.
Because people might be interested in it, not that it's, you know, it's perfectly good for consent, but it's just something that's somewhat interesting.
Yeah.
The board is concerned about PFAS.
That would be probably good for the results to go to the full board as a presentation.
Okay.
I would agree with that, but for the study to move forward, we don't have the data yet.
And maybe we can come back 6 months and have a kind of an update of where it's at, how the study's going, that kind of thing. Okay, we'll move it on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. Good job. Item 5 is to recommend approval of a resolution for construction contract with Castle World Estate for the new Hall Tanks 1 and 1A tank upgrade projects. And with this, it's Marin T.
Dobunathan Theramarin.
Theramarin?
Sure, by Marin.
Marin. Okay.
Good evening, Chairman Cooper and members of the committee. I'm Yoganathan Thirumaran, and I'm an engineer with the SCV Water, and I'm also the project manager for the Newhall Tanks 1 and 1A tank upgrades project. We have an item in front of you this evening to recommend approval of a resolution for a construction contract with Paso Robles Tank for the Newhall Tanks 1 and 1A tank upgrades project. Next slide, please. This is the location map of the project. Both tanks are pretty close next to each other on Deputy Jake Drive. It's about 1.5 miles from Sierra Highway and Newhall Avenue intersection. Next slide, please. So the first picture on the slide shows both tanks, and as you see, they are pretty close to each other. The second picture in the middle shows the newer tank, Tank 1A, which was built in 1995. And it has a fixed ladder and a cage around it. The third picture on the right shows the older tank, which was built in 1962, Tank 1. And it just has a fixed ladder and no cage around it. OSHA requirements for fixed ladder safety have changed recently in the last few years and indicate that cages will no longer be accepted as a form of fall protection on any fixed ladder, and all fixed ladders taller than 24 feet must have a ladder safety system or a personal fall arrest system. Most of our tanks do have a personal fall arrest system, which is SRL, self-retracting lifeline or lanyard. Operation staff access the top of our water tanks as needed for inspection and maintenance work. A better option for a safer and easier access for our operation staff would be to install stairs and catwalk if there are tanks next to each other, tanks in pair, which would also be in compliance with the updated OSHA requirements. Next slide, please. Yeah. So the first two pictures are just for illustration. The self-retracting lifeline that we have is pretty similar to that shown on the first two pictures. The second picture shows the way it's mounted on the top of the ladder. And the first one shows the person who's climbing would wear a harness, and the lifeline from the SRL is attached to the harness. And as the person is climbing, it automatically gets retracted. And one were to trip and fall, the SRL or the self-retracting lifeline would prevent the person from descending further. The third picture shows the newer tank's ladder in the cage. The last one shows the older tanks, just the ladder. And you can see the in both tanks at the very top, the red color equipment is the SRL, similar to the one in the first two pictures, is mounted to the fixed ladder. I also want to point out that our staff will be doing some of the construction inspection for this project. Next slide, please. On this slide, you'll see the Magic Mountain tanks, stairs, and catwalk pictures, which the project was completed recently. And the Nihol tanks, stairs, and catwalk project would also look pretty very similar to this once it's completed. I just wanted to share these pictures to show how it would look like once this project is completed. Next slide, please. So the staff advertised this project on plan and bids from July 8th to August 31st this year. In addition, we also advertised in the local newspaper, the Signal, on three different dates, July 16th, 23rd, and 28th. Bids were electronically opened on August 31st at 2 p.m. As you see here on this table, we received bids from five different contractors. In reviewing the lowest bid from Paso Robles Tank, their submittal meets all the requirements per the contract documents, and we are comfortable with their bid price, which is $299,500. It's quite lower than the engineer's estimate, which was at $386,000. Next slide, please. The slide here shows the project schedule. Today on October 6th, we are here at the Engineering and Operations Committee. And if it passes, we are planning to take this project to the board on November 1st. If the board approves, we'll be issuing the notice to proceed around November 10th. The total duration allowed for construction for this project is 150 calendar days. So the project is expected to be completed around April of next year. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors approve, adopt the resolution awarding a construction contract with Paso Robles Tank in an amount not to exceed $299,500 for the Nihol Tanks 1 and 1A Tank Upgrades Project. This concludes my presentation. And if appropriate, I would like to request this item to be considered to be placed on the consent calendar on the November 1st board meeting. Thank you. And with that, I'll bring it back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you, Mario. Yeah. Liz, any questions from the outside?
Seeing none.
Seeing none. Questions from the committee? Director Orzechowski?
Maron, I was wondering in your presentation if you could include pictures of our staff carrying their equipment up that ladder and what equipment they need. That'll be very helpful.
Yeah, we probably are not going to have photos of them carrying the equipment up the ladder because they can't really do that. A lot of times they rope the equipment from the side and they have to haul it up separately.
Okay, so that'll also be even more helpful too. If you look at page 5 on your presentation, I'm wondering the existing ladders. If you move forward with the staircase, do the existing ladders have to be removed, or do we keep one on the tank that does not have the staircase for like a second emergency escape, if need be?
On this project, thanks, Dr. Orzechowski. The existing ladders are being planned to be removed.
All of them?
For both tanks, yes.
Okay. And what's going to happen to the scrap metal? Are we selling it? Are we donating to a weld shop? What's going to happen to that?
That's a great question.
Scrap iron with
paint. We have a boneyard in each.
It would be up to the contractor.
Okay. They take ownership of those ladders once they cut them off. The vendor.
They're responsible for disposing of the ladders and part of the
contract. Yes.
And we can look into whether or not leaving the second ladder is a good alternative.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Director Ford.
Just a quick question then. Would the stairs then mean that we'd have to do less hoisting of equipment separately, that people could carry more up on their own as opposed to lifting it? That'd be great. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
And yes.
Mr. Peters.
There you are. I'm very familiar with these ladders and staircases and tanks. Is this contract a lump sum contract for the work or just installing the ladders and staircase, or not staircase, really?
Yes.
So no other work is being done?
No, it says they're going to paint the top with non-slip paint.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm asking. Is there other coatings that are going to be repaired because of the welding on the tank?
Yes, the areas that they will be welding, those areas will be repaired, correct?
That's inside and outside, correct?
Not inside, just outside. Okay. No work interior.
No work in the interior.
Yes.
Okay. I'm wondering, the next question is a little bit more based on the bid itself, is the contractor satisfied with this bid, even though he lost a little bit on the table there?
Yes, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that particular contractor has done many jobs like similar to this, and yes, yeah. We haven't had any. I think they are happy.
And so, it just brings up another matter. I noticed there's probably no design plans on this project, or is it?
There are design plans, yes.
And as far as who's going to check the structural capabilities of that staircase when it's actually designed by the tank manufacturer?
So it was designed by a consultant. We have a design engineer on board, and they have a sub-consultant, a structural engineering firm.
All right.
Who design, and they will be on board during the construction as well to inspect.
So is that part of the budget?
Correct. This is particular, the $299,500 is just for the contractor, but for the engineering support services, we will be issuing a purchase order, and it is included in that, correct?
I wasn't part of an authorization was, so I got to kind of ask that question. All right, I'm good. Thank you.
Maren, back to coatings again. When they spot weld on the outside to put this stuff on, it's going to affect the coating on the inside. How do we plan on taking care of the inside coating, and when do we do that?
So the interior coating will be done in the future by the, you know, the agency. And right now, I think Ryan has the, he might better answer. Ryan has his hand up. I'll let Ryan go first. Ryan.
I good evening, everybody. Sorry about the problem before. For some reason, I wasn't able to unmute my microphone. But yes, so we'll either doing a dive, right? So we do dives every 3 to 5 years. I think this one's on a dive schedule either next year or the year after. And then based on that result, they'll either quad epoxy it, which is an underwater repair, or this this tank is, I think, scheduled within the next 6 years to get recoated internally.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. Any other questions? Very good, man. Consent calendar. Is there a question?
Yes.
Very good. Move that to consent calendar. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maren. Mr. Abercrombie, monthly option production.
Thank you. The report, same as always. We're seeing standing or somewhere level still increasing, but we have wells off because of PFAS. Wells that are in production, we're seeing this continual slight decline as the summer leads into the fall, but I don't see anything really out of the ordinary. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Abercrombie?
Yeah, quick question. Mike, if you're still there on page, is 37 or 102 of the packet, whatever the production wells maps. I was just wondering, what's the status of renaming the tanks? Is that on schedule?
Mike is no longer on.
Okay, Mr.
Abercrombie.
Oh, sure.
Seeing no public comment.
My apologies.
The issue of renaming is still sort of out there. Okay. We haven't. We're taking baby steps. As you can imagine, we don't want to, you know, lose anything in the foray, and making sure we all agree on the process. We've taken a pretty good stab at what we think names should be, at least in two of the systems, the Valencia system and the Newhall system. We haven't yet done that in the Santa Cruz system, but we haven't officially rolled that off just yet. But it's still on our plans to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Abercrombie? Seeing none, we move on to item 7, Mr. Mayo, CIP construction status.
Yeah, thank you. We have the report as usual in the book to address questions that were asked recently at the last board meeting. I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that fortunately we're closing out several of these projects, which is good news. We have the entire front page is really looking to be closed before the end of this calendar year, and stepping into the second page. As we mentioned, some of these, we try to adjust these before each meeting. So we're hoping that the dates on here are accurate. We have just waiting on a DDW permit for the Valley Center well. The punch list items have been mostly addressed. The minor items going on for the construction site. So that hopefully will be closed out very quickly, and we'll be able to close out those first two items. The Commerce Center Drive pipeline is we're waiting on a final closeout paperwork from the contractor. And other than that, we are ready to close that one out. Those are the 99%, 98%. The ones that may get pushed a little bit is the Magic Mountain 4, 5, 6A, 6B. Because we're waiting on Edison, Southern California Edison, to do some work, and they will not do work until everything else is done. And so that's when they give you a schedule of when the work is going to occur. We're hoping tentatively that that schedule is November 30th. That's a tentative schedule they gave us. But the reality is sometimes that gets pushed. And then for Vista Canyon, the contractor gave us a schedule that crept into January. And we have pushed back and taken some work from the contractor, such as the SCADA cabinet and installation of that cabinet. And we've put that back onto ourselves to do that. The contractor didn't order the cabinet. And if they were to order it today, they wouldn't get it until January. That's not acceptable. We need to get this recycled water tank online. So we're doing all we can to push that as fast as possible. There are some other items on that same list for Vista Canyon tank, that such as a seismic control valve that the contractor didn't order until October 3rd, which is not really attainable to getting it done in a timely fashion. So we are either going to look at putting in a spool or seeing if we have an available seismic control valve that we can provide and then deduct from the contract both the installation and the cost for that, for those contracts. So I left it at November 30th because I'm trying our best to get it done this calendar year and be done with that project. If we were to rely on the contractor schedule, it'd be later than that. And I wanted to be able to expand on that in this list with a little more detail and reaching directly out to the PM. So I'm sorry I didn't elaborate more at the board meeting, but I want to make sure I gave a full answer to that question.
Thank you.
So we'll be happy with that item.
Any other questions on the CIP?
Real quick, on the Magic Mountain Pipeline delays due to Amazon, are we going to incur any delay costs from the contract?
No, we don't have a remobilization cost or anything else. There's no additional costs for that. We are taking over the finalization and punch list with in-house inspection staff. The in-house inspection staff is already on site for those projects. They're working on the development projects that are up there. So no additional cost to us, which is just an unfortunate delay. The side of that is we don't have a reservoir for that pipeline to go to yet. We're working on that still too. So from a operational standpoint, it's not a major impact either.
Thanks.
Chairman
Cooper,
can we call for public comment?
Please.
Seeing no public comment. Thank you.
Director Ford.
Yeah, quick comment on the last entry item. Courtney, which is pipeline modifications. You know, the contractor is LA County MTA. I know it's just started, but what are they really the folks are going to build the make the changes to a pipeline?
No, they have their own contractor directly underneath that, but all of our coordination so far has been with the MTA.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know if this is the appropriate place to ask this, but, you know, 5-point stock is down to 2.8 or something like that per unit. And it's sort of what happened right before the land source declared bankruptcy in 2007 or 8. And I'm a little concerned about how much financially we are. Are we going to be in have a lot of stranded assets if they don't complete their projects, if they declare bankruptcy? Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, I don't believe we'll have any stranded assets for any of their development work that they are doing. The pipelines they're installing are all under bond. And so if they were to declare bankruptcy or not be able to complete those, we'd be able to complete the bonding. You'd pull the bonding on that to complete the projects. Those are ones where they have recorded maps and there's customers that could be served. Mm-hmm. For anything else, as far as facilities or expansion beyond where they're at, we would simply not need to pursue with those expansions. The only item that we have that we need to settle is the tank site for regional storage. And we're working with them very aggressively right now as our top priority to get that site to be able to build it. We have a preliminary design and schedule, and then we're going to move forward with full design on that tank here shortly. But we need to get access and the purchase of that tank site from them.
I'm glad to hear about the bonding.
Any other questions for Mr. Mayo?
Mr. Mayor, thank you for bringing this to the ENL committee meeting today. We appreciate that. Take care.
And we'll move on to the committee planning calendar. It's in your package. I'm sure everybody's had a chance to look at it. Are there any items that you need to point out in that, Mr. Mann?
There are not. Just busy couple months coming up.
Yes, they are.
I'm going to shift a little, but they're going to be busy.
Any questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. Good. Item 8 or 9, Mr. Abercrombie. General report on treatment distribution operations and maintenance services section.
Thank you. A few updates. Updating you again on the status of our AMI meter project. We have been at it for about 26 days. It's working days. They've installed or changed out to AMI about 1,500 meters. So, you know, they're making their way to the 5,000. We anticipate they'll be finished, mid-November. And so far, everything's been going pretty well. Another just brief update. I know Matt provided an update at the board meeting. Maybe it was this week or the previous one, but about the turbidity issue that we've been having at the water treatment plants. As he indicated, the high level that we had seen was around 90 NTUs, and that compares to the normal that we see of anywhere from less than one to at most two. Currently, as in this week, we're seeing levels in the 7 to 12 range. They're averaging about 9. Which is obviously much better. Still magnitudes higher than where we normally are, but the plants are able to handle it, and we seem to be stabilizing and doing okay at this point. We did have a meeting with DWR earlier this week. Matt was on the call also, and we were discussing options. It covered everything from, what might be options to put more water into the lake? Because as you recall, part of the problem with having a turbidity event is if you have it when the volume in the lake is low, that makes it even worse. So we asked that DWR put that on their agenda to discuss at some of their upcoming operational meetings where they discuss operations for winter months. To see what options might be there. They are also going to contact the Forest Service, since 99% of the land around the lake is controlled by the Forest Service, to indicate some of the problems we're having with runoff, et cetera, and to see if there's something that can be done in that arena as well. Interestingly, this event does not appear to be primarily caused by the Root fire, which was the recent one, but rather by, I forget the names of them, but there have been a handful of other fires dating back into the 2013 and whatnot, over more on the east side of the lake. And that's where the canyon was that had the high inflows. And interestingly, to me anyway, I hadn't thought of this, but the fact that the lake is so low, there's more bottom exposed to air at the very upper reaches of the the arms of the lake. For instance, those arms retreat as the lake level goes down. And that's where all the silt and stuff settles for years. And so when you have these big events like we had a couple weeks ago, it sends a big flow of water and debris down those washes, and it stirs up all that other stuff that's already settled out in previous years. So anyway, perfect storm, but we're trying to have some discussions with the powers that be to see if there's actions that can be taken going forward. We're also working with our staff, being operations, engineering, and we're putting together ideas and things that we can do ourselves. Because this won't be one and done event. It'll happen again, and
So we're trying to put ourselves in a better position. We also completed, our safety group completed 3 days of training in the incident command system, the ICS, a week or two ago. And this is just another step in our emergency preparedness activities. And so that group now will be working to actually put in place tabletops and actual exercises that we move forward with. Safety is also has another inspection with the CUPA inspector. This is for the CalArc programs, the various safety programs that relate to all of our facilities that have chemicals, for instance, whether it be chlorine gas or ammonia. And so this inspection coming up is just a routine inspection that they do every so many years. Will be in Earl Schmidt sometimes towards the end of this month. And lastly, we're continuously hiring employees, it seems, because it's sort of a revolving door. People come, people go. And so the operations group is having 5 positions right now of operators. These are all backfill positions. And the good news is they had a good pool of interested people, and there were a lot of people that were pretty qualified that had the certifications we wanted. I think they ultimately interviewed 15 and have selected 5, and they're coming from various water agencies around and as I said, are certified and whatnot. So they're excited about that. We also had a water system supervisor position at the treatment plants that was vacant, and we were looking to fill that, and we ended up transferring our water system supervisor from our production side, or the former distribution retail side of things, to the treatment plant. So he's going to be moving up there shortly. His position is being backfilled by a person that comes to us from Glendale Water.
So we're getting all the water companies' people. Are they going to be mad at
it? Well, they get ours. You know, it's like this. So we did have at one point, a few years ago, I think, in operating, I think we hired 3 people from 1 small company. So I'm sure that was a hit. But, it's nice to be on that side occasionally, because a lot of times you're on the other side and you're seeing people leaving, go somewhere. But it's like I say, it's sort of a continuous thing where it seems like we always have a few openings here and there that we're always trying to fill. But we seem to be, there was a period there where it was hard to, get anybody interested in any kind of positions, it seemed, whether it's the entry level positions or higher levels. That seems, at least in this last round of things, we've seen a pretty good interest in solid candidates. And that has improved.
Very good. Any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions, Ms. Korzowski?
The attrition rates. So I guess we're losing people. Are we losing them to other water agencies, or are we losing them through retirement or moving out of the area?
All of the above. We've had a number of people retire in the past 6 months, company-wide, not just in operations. We also lose people to water agencies periodically. They'll find a agency that pays better, has some better benefit. I mean, you always have that you're competing with. And sometimes we'll attract them, and it wasn't because we had better pay or anything, but it's because they live here.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't want to drive to somewhere over the hill, like they've been doing for years. So I think, that seems to be working out okay. I don't see a huge problem there yet, but it is something we have to constantly be watching and be concerned about. And we do. We try to understand where people leave, why they're leaving, and if there are things we should be doing different, the better.
Okay. And my second question is, there was a broken fire hydrant on Avenue Stanford in Valencia on October 2nd. This was reported in the Signal, was in the business community, and a few business owners reached out to me to find out what happened, whether it was a car accident or whether it was a problem with the facilities or the fire hydrant itself. Can you report on that?
Sure. Yeah, and I looked it up myself, and I read the headline. It says fire hydrant burst in Valencia.
Burst.
That sounds bad. And then I read the little blurb, and it says, you know, deputies block traffic while the firefighters fix the hydrant. I'm like, well, so both of those things are wrong.
Yeah.
The fire department never fixes our hydrants. They might shut them off because they're usually the ones who get a 911 call or something. You know, we don't get the first call typically. In this instance, the hydrant was hit by a vehicle. I have not got the police report yet, so I don't know if it was hit and run or if there's a responsible party that we will know about from the police report. But it was hit by a vehicle, or, you know, the thing was shut off, you know, at that point in time on Sunday, whenever that happened. Our crews actually made the final repairs and we installed a new hydrant on the Monday.
Okay. Thank you for that. Back to you, Chair.
Any other questions? Just a couple of comments, Keith. I credit that group of 15 applicants that you got. I think Mike Alvord's class probably has a lot to do with that, as he pulls people from his classes, the good ones, so he knows which ones are good ones and which ones are bad ones. That helps get us candidates for up here tonight. And after listening to his presentation the other day, it would have been good fun to be in one of his classes, I think.
Well, he still teaches them here and there, so you can take one maybe.
You know, I've done that, been there, and that's all right. And the turbidity issue, I'm glad to see it got down out of the 90s and 70s and down under 9 or so now. Actually, sometimes it's easier to treat when it's at 7, 6, 8, mm-hmm. 9 than it is under 1.
Right.
Under 1 can be very difficult to treat at times. Those particles are really small. So, yeah, I'm glad to see it getting down there. Metropolitan has the problem that their pipeline coming from Castaic Lake is so big because it's 30-foot diameter, is the water going so slow for part of the year through there is they get settling in the pipeline all the way down from Castaic Lake to the Jensen Filtration Plant. Then all of a sudden somebody will say, my gosh, you know, we're going to go to 800 CFS for a while because somebody needs water somewhere. And you kick it up to 800 CFS and their turbidities go out of sight because it's been settling out. That and it brings in blind catfish who live in the pipeline that have no eyes that live in there. Yeah, you can filter those out if they come out.
Can you eat them? That's the question.
I've never tried them. Okay, item 10, Mr. Mayo, general report on engineering services.
Thank you very much. I'm going to keep it pretty short. We do have someone from staff who's going to do a nice presentation for us today.
Okay.
But I wanted to first and foremost have you help me welcome a new engineer, Mark Amatata.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Our newest engineer.
Well,
we wanted him to hear and see the whole meeting anyways. It's important that he gets the opportunity.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And they gave you a shirt already.
They did, yes. Brand new, you can tell.
Civil?
Civil, correct. Yes.
Yeah, like civil engineer.
So we had a great pool of candidates when Mark applied, and he really stood out, so we appreciate him joining us. We do have another hire that we're waiting on to pass background check, and so we'll be bringing another civil engineer on board as well. Lots of work to do, so we're trying to make sure we have the staff available. These are all prior approved position, replacing retirement and filling a vacancy that we had left vacant for some time, just trying to make sure we have a need. As always, trying to evaluate our staffing needs and figure out how we meet the needs of the agency and get these projects out and running. Mark is also going to help us out as a CM role for several of our projects, trying to save consulting money. And so we're going to be able to utilize some of his prior experience that way in projects that are coming up similar to the STAIR project. We will likely be using Marcon's SEM on that project, managing the submittals and going out to the site and saving us consultant fees that would have showed up on this presentation if we were not able to hire staff and have the qualified personnel here. So appreciate that going forward. Also wanted to highlight that we currently have out to bid Well 201, the treatment plant for that. We've finished the design on it and it's out to bid. So another 30 days or so, and we'll get the bids and evaluate them and bring that to the board this year so that we can begin construction on that project, hopefully early next year, and have some other wells back online. And with that, I would like to invite Damien, one of our senior construction inspectors, to give a presentation on our new meter procedure and how we're using some of our existing software to make that more efficient.
Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Damien Ferrand. I'm a senior inspector. Tonight, I'll be sharing with you the new meter installation and activation standard operating procedures. Next slide, please. Water meters, which are installed at the end of water services located within the public right-of-way or granted easements near private property lines and are used to track customer water usage, assist with water case studies and conservation measures, as well as generating revenue to support the system and operations of the agency to support safe and high quality, to supply safe and high quality water to the community. There's been a boom of new home development throughout the Santa Clarita Valley, which necessitates the installation of thousands of new meters. So engineering and inspection department took the opportunity to evaluate the process of installation and activation of new water meters for efficiencies. Pictured here are two different types of water meters. The potable meter has the black register cap and the recycled meter has the purple cap. Next slide, please. The past or legacy administration process for installing, inspecting, and creating new billing accounts for new meters consisted of email requests from developers and future customers who followed up with an analog type system of paperwork and interoffice mail between four different agency departments: engineering, inspection, field customer service, and customer care. Next slide, please. The workflow pictured here shows the legacy process in which the paper meter request forms had to physically travel to the different departments throughout the installation and activation process. You can see here the engineering department was creating and handling for tracking purposes just one meter form up to four different times throughout this workflow. This does not include any edits, reinspections, or installation failures, which would require the entire process to start over. We knew we could improve upon this. Next slide, please. To make this process more efficient, we started with a full review of the existing process, including working with all necessary agency departments to further understand their priorities and responsibilities. We also accounted for our customers and developers and focused on improved communication and reducing the time from the meter inspection request to the meter activation. A shared goal for all departments was finding an alternative to using spacers, which were time-consuming and expensive, ranging at a cost from $40 to $275 each, depending on the size. A spacer is a PVC threaded pipe with drilled holes that is manufactured by the agency and would be used as a temporary placeholder for the meter during construction and would prevent unauthorized water usage or theft. Other goals included digital documentation, streamlining communication, and improving assurances that all agency requirements have been satisfied prior to any meter releases and activations. Next slide, please. We were able to meet the goals discussed in the previous slide by utilizing Procore, a project management software and a centralized dashboard that is already utilized by the agency to manage all developer and CIP construction projects. It allows users to handle project details, schedule and automate tasks, and view real-time progress. Using Procore allowed us to improve the meter process by managing the workflow between developer and different agency departments, centralizing the data management and communications by improving data accessibility with real-time updates on all meter-related activities, easily extracting data through automated workflows and spreadsheet generations, and improving overall accountability for all team members involved in the process. Next slide, please. We then built a standardized process for all new meter installations using the Procore software. What you see here on the screen is a developer or customer-facing workflow that will be posted on the agency website and entails three phases, each of which will be highlighted throughout the remainder of this presentation. Next slide, please. Phase one in the meter process is satisfying all prerequisites. The developer and customer must complete the items shown on this slide before meters will be released for installation. The prerequisites have always been a requirement and are an important part of agency business. Some examples of prerequisites include testing and activating new assets, funding facility capacity fees, FCFs, and obtaining legal authority for access to the assets through recorded easements. This new customer-facing workflow supplies a more effective and organized communication method that the customer can use as a reference or checklist while planning for their meter installation requests. Once all the agency prerequisites have been completed, the developer will be provided a simplified informational packet via email from engineering. This packet will contain meter process information and tips for traveling the process. Engineering will then create a Procore project file, which will be utilized by all parties for the remainder of the meter installation and activation process. Next slide, please. To support our customers and developers, we created an easy-to-read informational packet that they will receive at the beginning of the process. This packet includes a developer-facing workflow, how to access Procore, and how to navigate the application. Next slide, please. Once all the prerequisites are completed and the customer and developer have access to Procore, phase two of the process, meter installation, will begin. When the developer is ready, they will access Procore to make their first meter request. Procore will automatically notify the inspection team on the request. Inspection will confirm agency requirements have been met and the site is ready for a meter installation. Upon inspection's approval, Procore will forward the request to field customer service for the meter installation and then to customer care for account creation, which will be flagged to prevent premature water usage. This new process eliminates the costly spacers and allows the meters to be installed earlier with the meter valve being locked off, preventing activation. Further protection will include the agency's existing advanced metering infrastructure, or AMI, which will be set up in a fashion to identify any unauthorized water usage. Also, to protect the newly installed box and meter, the developer will provide a protection around the assembly per the agency's new standard drawings. The protection method mirrors Edison's pull box detail standards, which is a wood frame structure installed around the meter box during the construction phase of the homes. Next slide, please. The third and last phase is meter activation. Though the meter is now installed earlier within the construction process, it is locked off until the downstream plumbing is connected and construction of the home or structure has reached a certain point of completion. This is to protect the public water system from any cross connections, tampering, and water theft, all while ensuring agency specifications are being met. When the developer connects to the meter, they will request a reinspection using Procore. Inspection will provide confirmation and will activate the water service upon acceptance. Customer service will then update the billing system, permitting water usage, and engineering will be automatically notified to close the individual meter request. As a result of this new process, the developer now receives water within only 1 week of their meter activation request. This is a great improvement from the legacy process, which took up to 3 weeks to occur. Next slide, please. Once all the project's meters have been installed, engineering can then proceed to the closeout process. All data will be extracted from Procore and stored in agency servers. The project will then be removed from Procore. Next slide, please. Several agency departments teamed up and coordinated the use of some of their existing management softwares, Procore, the advanced metering infrastructure, and the customer billing system, and created a new meter installation and activation program with efficient time and cost-saving measures, all while improving communications and accountabilities for all parties involved. We are still within the transition phase. Legacy developer projects that have the majority of meters already installed will continue with the old process until completion. Currently, there are only a couple of these projects left. All the other existing and new projects are using the new program described. While estimating these remaining project schedules, we are looking to complete this transition by early next year. Since implementation, we have received positive reviews from fellow staff members as well as the developers involved. This concludes my presentation. And with that, I hand it back over to Chairman Cooper for any questions.
Yay.
Good. Thank you, Damian. That was excellent. And what a difference from a week to 3 weeks, 3 weeks to a week. That's terrific.
As I thought, it's better for staff time as well.
Absolutely. Any outside questions, Liz?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee?
No. Great system.
No, very good. Thank you. Very good presentation, Damian. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good night. Okay. Anything else, Courtney, that you had?
No, that was it.
Before we adjourn, I want to tell you guys that, hey, thank you for putting together the tour last week. That was excellent. Something we've been wanting to do for a long time. And as usual, the engineering committee comes through and does a great job on that and stuff. So I think everybody that was there really enjoyed it. I know some of the newer directors had some very good comments about they had no idea. And when we look at the amount of equipment that is being maintained and operated by, we're not a large group, but when we see how many meters and how many tanks and how many booster stations and burnouts, and it's amazing. So thank you very much for the part. It was excellent.
I want to sure to let Mr. Alboard know he did the heavy lift on
that. And he did a great job.
I think we thanked him at the meeting on Tuesday, too.
I think.
Yeah, we did a lot of it. It was wonderful stuff.
Yeah, Mike, we don't want to thank him too much.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that he is a very good educator. And I agree with you what you said. I bet his classes are extremely informative and still very entertaining and worthwhile.
Yeah.
So he did an excellent job at that tour as well.
Yes, I used to teach those classes at COC, the water treatment and water math classes. And I'm nowhere the teacher. I can see that Mr. Alboard is, that's for sure. Yes, Peter.
Ms. Alboard, can you contact Ms. Jacobs and see if we can have an updated org chart for TDOMs and engineering at our, not the next meeting, but the following meeting with the new employees?
You're just looking for an org chart for
the new employees?
For the new additions, for the new employees.
Oh, okay, good.
You'd like that included in the packet?
No, I think it's a separate item that she brings to all of our stations. You could probably have an updated one, just for those two teams. I don't think finance is ready yet. That's it.
Very good. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.